everyone, and welcome to Another Bite, where we rewatch the most innovative and intriguing pitches from Shark Tank. I'm Jory, and I'm joined by Ariel.
Hey, friends.
And John.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Why did the marshmallow become an astronaut? To explore s'more galaxies. Nothing says sweet, delicious treat like a good old mellow, am I right? Today's founders totally agree. Will their product be enough to sweeten the sharks? We'll see after this quick break. Today in the tank, we have Funky Mellow, and Funky Mellow is brought to us by founders Delisa and Zach, and they're asking $50,000 for 15% of their business, which is a $333,000 valuation. Now, Funky Mellow kind of says what it is in the name, but it is a plant-based marshmallow. So here's the problem. Marshmallows, they're not made from great ingredients. There's no clean options. You know, you've got your gelatin in your typical marshmallow. The solution that these founders have kind of leaned into is Funky Mellow, which is a marshmallow cream that's gluten-free, and it's a plant-based refrigerated marshmallow cream made from aquafaba, which, if you don't know, is like the water that comes from chickpeas. So it offers a healthier, allergen-friendly, gluten-free option and alternative to marshmallow. This is something that you can, you know, put in your coffee, you can use as a dip, you could put it as an ice cream topper. John, I know you are already ready to say something. Go.
Sorry, I'm so fascinated by chickpea water. Is that the water that chickpeas come out of in the can, or is that if you squeeze them?
It's like the solution that they're in. And actually, fun fact, but this is what usually bartenders will use to create vegan cocktails. So if you're trying to order like a vegan whiskey sour, for example, they're going to use this in your drinks to make the foam.
So like when I open a can of chickpeas, should I be drinking that liquid?
I mean, you could.
Is it like a superpower?
I don't think that it's gone through a
couple. It's not like olive juice, you know?
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
It has to go through a couple steps before it's tasty. But I mean, you do that, report back. We'll see you in the next episode.
Or you won't see me in the next episode. One of the two. We'll find out.
Or here's COVID. Who knows?
Exactly. Maybe.
There's a clear problem here. I wrote down like my take on their problem statement was marshmallows are delicious, but poison you. It's kind of my like.
Fair enough.
Put that on the packaging.
Yeah.
You know, so like, okay, clear problem. And I mean, we know that they are really delicious and kids love marshmallow cream in particular. Fluffernutter sandwiches were a big hit in the New England area. Yeah. Marshmallow fluff is a marshmallow cream spread that was famous in the 80s for being delicious but poisoning you.
Womp womp.
You know, that kind of thing.
Most things.
So there's a real problem that they're trying to solve here. I think they have a problem themselves, though, which is they're a product that really doesn't fit in any category. And this is what has me particularly worried about Funky Mellow is that I don't know what category they fit in, which is going to make it extremely hard for them to go to market and to gain market share.
That's totally fair. Because as they were going through their use cases, I was like, oh, okay, so it's a coffee creamer. So, okay, so you would sell it
with the coffee creamers, you'd put it right in the dairy.
Right. And then they were like, actually, it goes on your ice cream. And I was like, oh, well, there's that small end cap that's usually for like
sprinkles
and things. So maybe right. But then they were like, also, it's a fruit dip.
I love that you're using this example of the grocery store, Jory, because like that's the easiest way to think about what categories are. When you walk into a grocery store and you look up at the ceiling and you look at those signs that are hanging down in each aisle, that is the simplest way to think of what categories are, the labels on those signs. Mm-hmm. And they're just like human nature, like we just organize things in our brain. And that's ultimately what categories are and positioning is it's just a way to say, oh, okay, I have some mental map of the universe of food and this product fits into this category that I understand what the alternatives are. And your whole job as positioning is to like plant your product into a pre-existing mental model of food or whatever product you're selling. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as a founder of a company, your job is either to enter an existing category, which people like understand. And in that case, if you're entering an existing category, your job is to show why you are better. Mm-hmm. Better could be cheaper, could be more features, like lots of ways to define better. Or you need to say, I don't fit in that existing category. I actually fit in a category you've never heard of. I am different. And in this case, I think they've got a real problem because they can't go into an existing category because they haven't decided on a single one. It doesn't naturally fit in one. Mm-hmm. But what they might be as a different product is too vague and likely not big enough. And they probably don't have the sort of budget they would need to make a totally new category for this product.
I don't necessarily agree. I actually think this belongs in a natural, organic, refrigerated section. You put it by the tofurkey and by the kombucha and by all the probiotic mixes. That's where this goes.
Yeah, but the problem is people are going to look at it and be like, I don't know what to use that for. Mm. They look at, you know, kombucha and they know what to put it on. And they look at tofurkey and they know where they're going to cook it, you know, what they're going to make tacos. So to me, it's just like, that's the fundamental challenge. No one knows what to use this product for. And you have to educate people on what to use it for. And the only way to do that is to tell them what category it's in. If it's in every category, it's in no category.
I do see where Ariel's coming from, though, when I think about like a specialty store like Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. Specialty goods like kimchi, like daiya, like vegan options, tofurkey you mentioned, they're all actually consolidated in sort of like a plant-based region of the grocery store. So what I think Ariel's getting at, though, is like, as long as you're in lining with the intent, and if you know that the intent is for like plant-based alternatives, then there could be a solution there. But then I also see where you're coming from, where we need to make sure that the customer is aligned with the job to be done of the aisle. And if that's not clear, they might not even just find the product.
Listen, could they put it in the natural food section and likely get some sales? Yes. Is that the sort of business that I think has a real clear path to scale? No, it's a product without a use case.
Plot twist. They've mentioned that the best use case that people are using this for is for their coffee.
It's for coffee.
It's weird when you think about
it. Right. I was like, marshmallows and coffee? Tell me more.
Aquafaba and coffee?
Mix it up.
I know. Which it sounds weird, but then you think about what marshmallows really are, and then that sounds weirder. So would your suggestion be to actually just focus in on that use case and win that use case?
That is definitely what I would advocate for them to do.
Okay.
If they want to start to get market share, I would pick a use case.
Focus on coffee.
And now, the amazing thing, I think, is to Ariel's point, there are lots of people who will then get creative with it and say, actually, like, I could dip my strawberries in this, or actually, and you could achieve that by putting a label on the product that says, oh,
like, try
I
this.
Know you're putting it in your coffee. Have you tried mixing some berries in a bowl with some granola with it or whatever? And by the way, looking at the market, the marshmallow market's pretty small. It's a $350 million market. The coffee creamer market is big. It's a $4.5 billion market. Mm. So then you're like, okay, I'm not playing for marshmallows here, which are a rudderless non-category product. I'm playing for coffee creamer and basically making the case that this is healthier, more natural. Like, there's all sorts of studies coming out about like the negative impacts of coffee mate on human beings.
Don't say this to me.
So swipe right in, choose a use case, go for it. Go into a category people get.
Yeah.
You're a better product.
More healthy.
Higher price, have a bigger margin. That'd be my advice.
I see it from both sides, right? It's a blessing curse of multiple use cases. I think the only challenge is remembering that this is a premium product. So like, what is going to actually stop someone going into the store and saying, yeah, I'm going to pay $8 for like Funky Mellow versus $4 for, you know, my coffee mate that may not actually be good for
me. Get a jug.
You know, and get like a massive economy size. So I see your point of like finding a category that has a clear road to success that you can really hone into and own being that like disruptor in the category. But because it's a premium product, they're going to run into that instance where you're going against the big retailers, big like brands in the space that can afford to be much cheaper.
And so, well, then it just becomes like good old fashioned business tactics, which is feels like a game that you can play. I mean, like, there's price elasticity and there's margin. And you can basically say, well, I can either play with the price point to either drive more volume at a lower margin or to drive lower volume at a higher margin. And like, that just becomes math. And if their strategy is, we want to just take market share right now, to your point, Ariel, they would lower their price and they would say, we're going to price competitively against Coffee Mate and make very little money in the short term in terms of profit because we just want to get everybody using this product. If they want to just churn out a bunch of money because they want to build a brand and they want to invest in a bunch of other things, and they would keep their price point high and say, yeah, Coffee Mate is for that type of person, but Funky Mallow is for you. And they would have a smaller market and make a lot more margin on it, a lot more profit.
And it seems like they just honestly also need to think about scaling what they're already doing. So we didn't really get too much into the weeds of like how they've had success so far beyond the fact that we know that walking away from this episode, you know, they're in 20 stores, right? And sales last year, $100,000, which Daniel was like, given how many places you're in, is like a super respectable profit, just like considering the size and scale of like customers you're marketing to. So honestly, too, it could just be whatever they're doing, just do that more.
Yep.
More in more stores, get in more stores, right? Get that buy-in from maybe those larger chains and see where it goes. Even though Daniel really like stepped into the ring and was like, this sounds amazing. It sounds just like Kind. We actually got a quick undercut by Damon.
Swooped on in there.
Swooped in, but with the exact offer that they asked for. So he was like, I'm going to give you exactly what you want. And that almost never happens on Shark Tank. So he offered $50,000 for 15%. And it was interesting because it seemed like their dream shark was Daniel, because they kept kind of like looking over as he made this
offer. Are you sure you don't want to make an offer, Daniel? Like,
yeah, are you sure?
I mean, it made sense. He has the most connections in like the CPG space.
Right. And he was also, this reminds me so much of Kind in the beginning phases when we were just starting up. So I think they were like, yeah, so partner with us. But ultimately, Damon and the rest of the sharks sort of pressured them to take a deal. So they sealed the deal with Damon, $50,000 for 15%. How would you market Funky Mellow if you were brought on as their consultant today?
All of the recipes of like, this is what you can use aquafaba for. With traditional marshmallows, we say gelatin all the time, but gelatin is, you know, ground up animal bones and cartilage. Bringing that more to the shoppers' minds of like, yeah, this is what you're putting into your children and yourself. Here's a cleaner alternative that tastes just as good. And you can put it in your coffee. I think they could really find a lot of success there. Not necessarily leaning too hard into scare tactics, but I think calling out the value that, you know, having something that came from, you know, a freaking vegetable.
Yeah, it's delicious. And
now into marshmallow form is amazing.
Healthy but delicious coffee. That's my positioning for them. They would just go super hard at that. And they'd try and basically create a bunch of fear, uncertainty, and doubt about the current options on the market. And they would try and prove that they are the perfect middle ground.
Healthy and delicious coffee is trademarked by John Dick. You need to pay him for that supplier.
Every time it appears on packaging,
I want a royalty. As a slogan. Where's my royalty?
$1 royalty.
I don't know. It's really cool that they have gone out and found a way to make an alternative to like a mass market product that isn't so good for you. And I hope that they get focus and I hope they gain market share and I hope they just become a mainstream product over time, because it seems like their story is really awesome.
Time will tell.
I want to see this except for Dunkaroos in the future.
Now that's a smart little move, like, Ariel. Bring Dunkaroos back.
Funkaroos.
Funkaroos. That's trademarked Ariel.
Look at us marketing. Production for today's episode was brought to you by Ari DeSarmo. Editing comes from Robert Hartwig and support from Alfred Schultz. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or wherever you subscribe to the greatest podcasts ever. That does it for me. See you next week in the tank for another bite. I want to take a break to tell you about a podcast coming to the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. It's called The Next Wave: AI and the Future of Technology. It's hosted by Matt Wolf and Nathan Lands. AI technology is transforming the way we do business, and the media landscape is currently fragmented. The Next Wave is leading the pack on AI technology and how you can apply it to growing your business. Matt and Nathan are leading AI creators and your guiding light in the AI and technology frontier. Listen to The Next Wave wherever you get your podcasts.